Now, to introduce our featured reader, James Scholes is the author of The Trailer with Signature Editions 2021. He holds degrees from Arizona State, North Dakota, and Southern Illinois universities, and he has lived, traveled, and worked in over 90 countries. His poem, The Trailer, won the 2013 CBC Poetry Prize, and his short stories are featured in Coming Attractions 13 with Oberon Press. His writing has been nominated for the Journey Prize, the Pushcart Prize, and both the Western and National Magazine Awards. He lives in Winnipeg, where he teaches creative writing and literature at the University of Winnipeg, and also helps run a small 120-year-old family farm. Please welcome James Scholes.
Hi, thank you so much. A huge thank you to Angeline Schellenberg for her time and your great energy, your reading of the Speaking Crow poem, your work, and to all of those who support Speaking Crow. Also a big thank to the Winnipeg International Writers Festival and Thin Air on right now with amazing readings and writers. So please check them out. And not to put the pressure on all of us tonight, but for me, and for me as well, but I've always stressed in my creative writing classes that I teach, poetry is meant to be spoken. And as the great W.H. Auden said, poetry is memorable speech. And Rita Dove reminds us that if poetry doesn't sing, it ain't poetry. And so I'll take things one step further. When you write poetry, you change the world. And when you speak poetry, you change the world and your own world. So thank you for the opportunity and the honor to share my poetry with you, your poetry with me and all of us. And this one's for you, Mom. This first poem is the first poem of the title collection, The Trailer, and it's the first part of the first section. And this poem won the CBC Poetry Prize, and it also taught me that you just never know what might come of your writing if you submit your work, and also that some dreams do come true. The Trailer, Part 1. Teaching my students the most unloved things make for the most lovable stories takes too much work. My trailer, that perfect example, remains parked in silent shame, like a criminal record, crouching low in history's shadow. Nobody knows the love given, won, made, and traded between 2x3 wood-paneled walls. I told her the love, the most unloved things often make for the most lovable stories, that baking hot, long August day, tilted leaky toilet, sunken floors, dark, soft, and soggy in so many places. Sweet nothings were whispered about the economy and living within our means, while she stood tall, eyes beautiful in blue-gray sparkling wonder under rusty windows, chubby-bottomed old doors pressing down, while she sank in, shook her head, but accepted my promises. Lies. Let me open the secrets of our leaky tin shack, show her awkward construction, poor and painful renovations, techniques and temper borrowed from olden days. Madness was simpler then, explainable. By living disasters daily, the Irish learned the hard way how to not bury a fighting chance. My students learned the way well-worn, pain-ready folks fuel top-shelf character, how voice feeds persona, how setting lifts the sails of a story, and how grading gets done under the influence of more than just good intentions. The next poem I'm going to read, Kitchen Party, this poem was rejected a number of times, but ultimately made it to the final round at the editorial table of a few literary journals before being cut for what they called borderline mixed metaphors. Well, no, that was planned, and they were as supposed to be as mixed as you could get, and that was sort of the point, but anyways, mixed metaphors are not really what you're supposed to go for in poetry, but we do know that the best parties in the world end up in the kitchen. So, Kitchen Party. This glass is nearly full of faraway and fantasy. The half moon, butterflies, its quiet light, upon one awkward truth. I can't get away from the vivid butchery of my need, because desire cuts from all angles. Its blade is blind. This little ache's already led to years of quiet bake, but only the oven seems to know the true temperature of my secret recipes for delight and disaster. Sitting at a microbrewery in BC, just once, and I assure you, and I'm ashamed to admit it, that I was at a microbrewery in BC. But as I sat there, a couple at a nearby table, who each had a set of taster flights in their beer in front of them, and they'd clearly looked and sounded like they'd just come from a course in beer tasting. And on my bar napkin, I started writing down their comments, like barley forward, hoppy, citrusy, crisp notes. And eventually I went home and I used their words to put together a sonnet that sort of predicts their future. So next time you're out at the bar and sitting around just drinking, listen in and steal stuff, all right? She tasted beer. She tasted beer way better than I ever could, but barley forward made me giggle, and that wasn't a good thing on our third date. We were well into our second flight, too, and I was happy with hoppy and even cool with crisp notes, right? An orange slice came between us, started our citrusy downfall, and while she is still a super fan of microbrews, especially ale, sly, bitter aftertaste, a cold can works for me, especially a Guinness, which, by the way, has a smooth finish. My first ever sonnet, thank you. My first ever sonnet that I wrote and submitted was accepted for publication within a month at the Malahat Review. So I was pretty excited, and that made me think I knew what I was doing, which is probably wrong. So I wrote dozens more sonnets, and one after the other, after the other, after the other. And some of those are in my book, The Trailer. And I like to think of them as comic sonnets. So they're meant to be funny. And I'm also always shooting for doubleness. So in my poetry, I'm always trying to have two things happening at once, something on the surface and something just below. But I guarantee you, Ish, this poem is really about parking. She was great at parking. She was great at parking and could work her way into her spots like a professional drive instructor. Each time was an intimate interview in the lot. My voice cracked there. Intimate interview in the lot. Betwixt vehicle and space, she would reach her goal every time and in style, seeking satisfaction in the sweet distance between. She had a way of finding the right angle, peaking her approach, and forever backing in clean. We went bumper to bumper to near fender bender on more than one parking occasion. Her parallel was truly unparalleled, rendering me spent and leaving only minor abrasions. I loved her strategy, all feel, and when she found the right spot, you'd know by the cry in this passenger's sigh of delight. But she wasn't just great at parking, though. She was great at caring for people and cooking and driving and managing things. And in fact, another sonnet of praise, because she was better at everything. She was better at everything than me, especially a very wide range of obscure but cool international and Olympic sports. Dressage never horsed around with her fashion. Sumo loved wee round courts, but not thongs, and Australian rules anything, all sorts of body contact encouraged. Now, very different schools of fish were fond of her fine action with fins and followed her deep sea diving, especially into the wreck. And her great skill at high lie is no lie. She made even the leprechauns of Ireland jealous of her hurls in hurling, but in curling, her first rock found my heart. It still lives in her house around the clock. This will be the final sonnet I read, I promise, okay? I swear. In case you were wondering why the mustard bottle on the cover and what's up with that, I only have to admit, I actually have to admit to having a bit of a relationship with that particular condiment. And thank you, Angeline, for having so much fun with that introduction. But that relationship with mustard did get me into some trouble. So, and it also required a sonnet. She was into my meatloaf, but not how I spiced things up. It was the same for my steak marinade. For me, a little cayenne in my ketchup works wonders. Never thought we'd fade over food. She assured me it wasn't me, specifically. Just one thing I cooked with. Passion was right, temperature raised nightly. Teaspoons of touch, cupfuls of love sifted daily. Well, as for my marinade and my secret recipe for no success, curry, cinnamon, red pepper flakes, all things she liked. I even let it sit super long. But the one thing I added and couldn't live without, she hated. And thus it was that yellow mustard came between us. And you see how I just made yellow mustard come between us as well? All right. So I have one more poem from the trailer, and then I have two more poems that I want to read. But this next poem I'm going to read from my collection, The Trailer, tries to capture two things. One, the precarious nature of contract faculty life in a humorous way. And two, the essence of the old hinterland who's who vignettes. Many years ago, you'd be watching your one channel on television in Canada, French or English CBC. And all of a sudden, this somber music would enter in and a voice in a scene would appear, this lake and a woo-woo, this loon cry, and then subsisting on a diet of fish and small rodents, the habitat of the common muskrat is the marshy swamplands of the vast and Canadian Northern Shield. A little more background to this reading. I was an actor once, all right? So just the once, actually, because apparently my acting skills were rangy and sometimes over the top. And according to my acting teacher, my method was and is simple. From whatever accent I start out with, at some point, I eventually shift into a British accent. It's just the way it is. So this one is called, excuse me. I like to drink water in a wine glass. Lifestyles of the Contract Faculty. A vignette. Cue the loon. Hear the lilting flute. Woo-hoo. See the shuffling, hurried feet as we follow the creature's uncalculated route down the dim-lit hallway of its unnatural environment, the university. Wrinkled costuming in well-worn clothes, unpolished shoes is a common form of the creature's mimicry, making it difficult to discern one creature from another. Habitats include basic shared caves, basements, closets, storage rooms, and stairwells, spaces rather indicative of the creature's potential future prospects and liminal nature of its existence. Socio-agronomic studies reveal diets rich in little, a life low in esteem, and a penchant for self-punishment. Tests also reveal alarmingly poor taste in fashion. Sex, I'm switching into the British accent, as you can see, sex is regularly undermined and constantly undetermined due to the creature's irregular schedule, ability to cower and blend, and the chameleonic nature of its employment. While highly intelligent, communicative, and the bread and butter of universities worldwide, the creatures, including sessionals, adjuncts, temps, terms, and turnips, remain socially awkward. Approach with caution. Although docile in their work setting, fierce competition for scarce resources mean conflict is not uncommon among members of the species. Cue the loon. The two final poems I'm going to read for tonight before I get to hear your amazing poetry, everyone. These are from my latest collection. So where the trailer takes readers into, around, inside, and even under and all over the trailer, my latest collection of travel poetry, The Stone Roses of Sarajevo, takes readers around the world into places as exotic as India and Mongolia, magical as Morocco and the Seychelles, and mundane as Murfreesboro and Carbondale, Illinois. Flatbeds and boxcars. CN rail slipping through Sunday afternoon, cutting into my quiet with a little steel-on-steel harmony to back up my soundtrack of Gordon Lightfoot while carrying the culture of oil north from New Orleans. Carloads of fossil fuels, dirty energy heading to Chicago in a tidy frenzy of steel and Canadian music. Flatbeds raised for resources going home hungry, empty from the weight of the way down south, and an offload of fuel corn and filthy coal. Boxcars left hoping for hobos. I gotta stop there. That's a great line. I'm sorry. At first I was like hobos hoping for boxcars, but I went and then I was like, oh, boxcars have their dreams as well. So boxcars left hoping for hobos in Mexico's making the most of their peaceful ride to the south side of a hard city. One long, strong train taking her treasures dear and afar, dropping loads here and there for seekers everywhere. Meeting up with the Texas-Mexican Railway midway through the northern spit of the great state of Illinois. And now singing are the empty lumber cars, a choir made light and fast by the loss of load, while slick cylinders whistle Dixie and dream of their brief holiday from the work ahead. Sweet so long to the caboose from my rented room, still shaking, quaking from the weight of freight upon those rails, rolling Canadian-made steel wheels, taking their sweet song north. And my final poem, I want to just say before I read that, thank you so much, Angeline, and to everyone attending for listening. And even if you stop listening at times or even altogether, thank you. You gave me the opportunity and I am grateful. The travel poem, this travel poem is featured in my new collection and the Stone Roses of Sarajevo. And it was published in CV2, which is a wonderful local literary journal and supportive venue for art and literature, as well as Prairie Fire. But I really appreciate the help of both of those literary journals in Manitoba and in Winnipeg. This one is called Indian Ocean Song. Bring your blue water's sweet music back to this calm shore. The sand misses its quiet concert in wave and swell, roll and roil. Glistening in the distance, gentle currents swim under the warmth and the wind in the heated conversations between rip and tide. In mean weather, more akin to the Indian Ocean's powerful storm surge, arguments get tucked into the sky's monsoon mood of dark and dim, an unkind gloom that holds a field's dream in his hands, a farmer's breath in her chest, and sets a fisherman's heart to sing. Check the thatch, the nets, bless the mud huts and hens, and make for quick shelter. Mother Nature's fury does come quick in Karnataka this time of year. If you're not done with the harvest, you will be soon. Thank you so much, everyone, for reading, for listening, and I'm looking forward to hearing your poetry.
Thank you, James. That was so good.